Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, you know, this show has been going on now. I'm completing, I believe, my fifth year or, well, maybe I should count this up, but maybe it's my sixth year. But anyway, throughout the years, people have asked me, what does it mean, balancing form and essence? And there are so many ways to answer this question. Reiki, our practice, gives us a form. And yet, without understanding and without the practice of the form, we don't really meet the essence of what we're given. And it just seems that one of the lines through all the stories for over all these years has been this wonderful balance of how people start with form and then they get to essence, or they come to Reiki because they just hear the word, get the essence, and then they explore the form. And then it's taken up to the next level where Reiki becomes a practice, then it becomes for some a spiritual practice, and then it becomes this discipline that is like an everyday discipline. So it's something that we choose every day to do because it benefits us. And that's when we're really integrating this balance of form and essence. And then we move to the next level, which is on a global scale. So how can we as a global community create and benefit our world, and how can we allow it to, how can we allow our practice to benefit the balance of form and essence in our world? And I feel that, you know, this is really in some way a great simplistic way to look at the imbalances that we have in our world and also to provide some kind of a solution for it. We are the solution, as we all know. And the more that we practice our Reiki, the more that we become part of the solution. I have with me today Chuck Vickery, and he's a longtime Reiki practitioner. He's, when I met him, he lived in the south of the United States, which is a very special region of the United States. And
still there.
Still there. And there's something really poignant about his story, and I'm really happy, Chuck, that you were willing to share your story with us today.
I'm really honored. I was surprised when you had mentioned this, so I'm really pleased to be here.
Great. Wonderful. And, well, you know, I always start off with Reiki stories because they're the best. So I would love for you to just tell us how you met Reiki, you know, how did it feel to you to, you know, practice Reiki, and what has been your path in Reiki? So,
good grief. Let's see. It started, in the mid-80s. I was in graduate school in San Diego, and, while I was in graduate school, I was experimenting with a lot of drugs, mainly methamphetamine. So now you know my sordid past. But being in and out of recovery, you know, it was very difficult. But during that time, I had met someone named Jason Thompson.
Oh.
Yeah. And it had been a while since I had seen him. Since I was busy doing drugs, and I thought, well, you know, I saw him advertising that he was giving Reiki treatments, and I had no clue what Reiki was. But I thought, well, this would be a good excuse to, you know, reconnect with him. So I called him up and made an appointment, and I was sitting out in my car doing my crystal meth. And I went in, you know, thinking, okay, this is going to help me talk a lot and, you know, maybe it'll help the treatment. But I laid down on the table and he put his hands on my eyes and I came down immediately, which is something unheard of. And even though I had been using amphetamines for weeks, I never crashed. And I thought, this is something I've got to follow. So he introduced me to his master, Kate Nunney, and I got my first degree from her. Had an incredible experience doing that. Just I couldn't believe the cleansing and the energy that I felt. And shortly after that, I moved back to Georgia and got my second degree from a woman named Herta Park. And I was working for the state of Georgia with, I was in recovery, working with the state of Georgia with the Department of Corrections and doing alcohol and drug treatment. So, you know, it was a great way.
Sorry, it's just, it's really ironic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But then a lot of us that do substance abuse counseling are recovering ourselves. While I was doing that, I was also experimenting with a lot of things, crystal work and shamanic healing and different things like that. And I was really into the body-mind connection.
Uh-huh.
And I saw a guy advertising Rolfing, you know, the very intense massage.
Yeah. Wonderful stuff.
Yeah. And so I thought, okay, 10 sessions, yeah, I can afford that. We'll do that. So I started going to him. And during that time, I'm, you know, treating myself with Reiki, and one of the first Reiki books I was looking for, you know, I had no connection with Reiki in the city or anything, but I bought a book by Shalila Sherriman and Bodo Baginski.
Yeah.
It was the very first Reiki book I got, and in there it listed the Reiki Alliance Masters.
Uh-huh.
This was like the first issue of it or something.
Right. And it was actually the first book that was written about Reiki, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the sweetest books and still one of my favorites. But in that list was this guy's name that was giving me Rolfing, and that was Les Curté.
Oh, how amazing. Les.
Yeah. And so I talked to him about it, and, you know, I thought about, you know, pursuing mastership. And I wanted everything to be right, you know, and I had called Ken Bauer, talked with him a good bit.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I wrote you a letter, because I wanted to make sure that it was okay if I asked Les to teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have your response. I just found it the other
really?
Day, as a matter
oh
of fact.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Should I ask what I said?
No, it was a wonderful letter, you know. And it turned out that you knew Les.
Yes,
and,
I did.
And Maureen, and you know, just so it just felt right. The connection felt right, and so I was initiated in November of 1989. Then shortly after that, Ken invited me to a small master's gathering at Chelsea's in February of 1990, and that was 15, 20 people, but just incredible. And I knew that this was right for me. And then after that, I joined the Alliance, and my first conference was in Vleland.
And, oh, wow.
Got very involved. And I remember when we were on the boat together, I was wanting to meet, I had a list of people, you know, I wanted to meet Ben, and I wanted to meet you, and I wanted to meet Michael. You know, had this whole list of people I wanted to meet. So it was just an incredible trip for me. And I've always just had a real fondness for the Netherlands since then.
Yeah. So what year was that?
That was in
1990. Gosh, I've lost track. The years just kind of blend together.
Yeah.
1990. Wow, that's ancient history. Okay, go for it.
So, but, you know, becoming involved with the Alliance for a long time and eventually working on the board has just been an incredible experience for me. But at the same time, you know, I had to make a living. And
right.
My dream would be to teach Reiki full time, but that didn't pay the bills at the time. And
right.
So I continued, you know, with substance abuse counseling. I've done several things in between, but I've always wound up coming back to that. And What has been consistent for me, though, you know, I was saying that I had studied crystals. I was, you know, had, I don't know how much money invested into different types of crystals, right, to do layouts and things.
Right.
And sweat lodges and all this kind of stuff. But the only thing that has been consistent and stayed with me has been Reiki.
Huh,
and, you know, I want to integrate that into my substance abuse counseling somehow. I know that there's a center in South Carolina that teaches it as part of their protocol. And I'd like to find a way to do that.
Teaches Reiki as a part of their curriculum?
Yeah, I think an option that people can take. But, you know, and I've explained this and talked to, you know, my new supervisor and everything, because to me, it's such a way to empower the patients that I work with. You know, I work mainly now with opiate addiction, which is one of the most difficult addictions to break. But when they begin to crave, or if they're under stress or whatever, they would have this option of giving themselves a treatment. Mm-hmm. You know, and that to me is so empowering.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And
so how's that conversation going?
She's actually very open. She's very open. I would have to figure out a way to do that. There's, you know, complications as far as legalities, things like that, because, you know, charging a patient, and, you know, I'd have to figure out a way to do that. So there's logistics involved.
Right.
And I may have someone else come in to teach or something like that. But, you know, to me, it would just be something very, very powerful, you know, for them to use.
Well, and when they're ready for it, too, I would assume.
Yeah. What's interesting is I've been sometimes talking with patients and sometimes with staff as well. I was in my office the other day, and they were wondering what Reiki was and all this. And you know, I asked them, have you ever felt energy before? No, they hadn't felt it. And this was the staff member I was talking with. And so I started working a little bit with polarity with her so that she could physically feel this energy around her body. And she was so shocked. And I said, this is, you know, the subtle kind of level of energy that, you know, we're working with. And in my belief, that's who we really are. You know, is this energy. I don't know. I just feel like there is so much more to us than this physical body.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a question that came up. I haven't worked with substance abuse personally. I have interviewed and known some people in Reiki who have done it now for years, and I'd love to connect you with them, you know, as a networking system, and also maybe for you to gain some strategy of how you can, you know, do what you want to do with it in your own program.
Mm-hmm.
But in like, I think intellectually I really agree with you about, you know, that's who we really are. We're like energy beings.
Yeah.
And there's this movie, I always forget which movie it is, about this woman in the bathtub, Close Encounters? No. This woman is in the swimming pool, and she takes off her human skin, and she's like this.
Oh, yeah.
And
Cocoon.
Oh gosh, I don't know why I never can remember that name of that movie. That was such a mind-blowing movie for me. Here it is about old people, you know, getting young by floating around in this swimming pool of these cocoons. But I really got it, and it was so like Reiki. I mean, it was really amazing, huh? So I always have had this question, and I haven't had anybody I could ask it. So I'm going to ask you. This is my disclaimer. that I believe that people who somehow get in a life situation where they're into substance abuse, I believe that they are actually quite sensitive to this other realm, but there's no conscious way of articulating it or dealing with it, because of course the rest of the world thinks you're nuts.
Yeah.
So, unconsciously, I just wonder if there is a way that people retreat into a place where an altered reality seems like home, more like home than what we, you know, what I will say sober people feel like is home. And just wondering about these veils between these two worlds of our spirit self and our physical self, and how the disconnection of these two bodies can be really disturbing, and maybe some kind of energetic motivation to create something like substance abuse. Do you understand where I'm going?
Yeah.
Do you think I'm just totally off the track?
No, not at all. I understand. I haven't heard it put quite that way, but it makes perfect sense to me. I sometimes think, I know for myself that I get so distracted by my five senses, and I'm looking out here and I'm seeing that I've got to get to work at a certain time, and I've got to buy gasoline, and I've got bills to pay, and on and on and on, and the telephone's ringing, and just so many things are distracting me into this physical world that it is so easy to neglect my spiritual being.
Uh-huh.
And I think that sometimes people can use drugs to cut off the five senses in a way, so that we're not so tied to this physical earth. I don't know. It's a lot. It's a lot to think about.
Well, I mean, I just wonder. So maybe I'll get more personal, and you can tell me if this is too personal. And that is, can you share with me and with the listeners what you think your motivation was to start doing like crystal meth? And I don't know what else you did before that.
Yeah, I experimented with a lot of things, but that turned out to be my drug of choice. It helped me in a way to feel connected to other people when I really wasn't. It helped me to, it made me think a lot faster, you know. Mm-hmm. I could come up with ideas that were just incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look back at it, though, like when my supervisors at work confronted me with my behaviors and I see what I was doing, for example, I was thinking that I was making this brilliant nurse's note on a chart. And when they showed it to me, it's like three pages long, and all you need is a paragraph, you know.
Right.
So I think that's one of the dangers of using the drugs that way. You don't know that you're really incapacitated and not functioning well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's another take on. So, but you didn't really answer my question. So what motivated you in your life to actually start using and then continue with it? But just because you felt like it made you a better person?
No, I think I had... there were needs to belong with other people and to feel connected with other people. And those needs were not met. There were also needs to escape from who I was, because dealing with my sexuality during that time, you know, in the South was just extremely difficult. Even, my gosh, when I came back in 1987, I had moved back to Georgia, and just shortly before that in the South, to find a recovery group that was a gay recovery group, you had to call the office, and then they would have someone to call you, and you had to be with someone that was gay, and you had to go to a secret meeting place and ring the bell on the church, you know, and they would let you in if you were with somebody, you know, because it was so secretive back then. You know, so there's that kind of pressure, you know, from dealing with my sexuality, you know, back in my high school years, that I think I was trying to escape. I started using back, I guess when I was 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
But that's about when I was, you know, starting to deal with my sexuality and hide everything.
Mm-hmm.
And what was, what's really interesting is that, the year I became a Reiki master is when I met my partner Murphy, and he came to the, conference with me in Phoenicia the next year.
Right.
Yeah. So, and by that time, you know, and in that particular group, we were so accepted as a couple. You know, a lot of, it seems like Reiki seems to just bypass all of that. You know, it's just very healing.
Right. Wonderful. Well, I don't know about bypass, but it certainly has been a really welcoming environment for people who might be considered eccentric in the outer world. And it is very healing, and it's very beautiful. It's the one thing that that's one of the great gifts for me of our Reiki community, is a willingness to accept each other. And, you know, there are other things that we kind of get involved with as far as judgment, but, you know, sexual preference and so on doesn't seem to be one of the biggies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's great.
You know, I've been sort of out of touch for a long time from the Reiki community. I think partially because of the location where we live. But, it, you know, my whole thing, I wanted so much to reconnect with everyone. And that was my whole purpose of this recent trip to Europe. And it was the most wonderful, incredible thing. I saw people that I had not seen, like Wilhelmine Moll. I haven't seen her in 20 years. Most people I haven't seen in like 15 years. And just the heart connection that I had with them through Reiki, it just fills me so much with love. We picked up as if we never missed a beat with each other.
Right. Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know of any other group that does that.
Yeah. Well, and it's like a cohesively physical communicative community either. You know, it's not like, you know, everyone else is doing daily emails or something. It's just a community that is, and it's based on more of our spiritual beings and the experience of being connected, right?
Yeah.
So what I was trying to say earlier is that there are some people who feel disconnected for whatever reason, and I believe that they take alcohol or some kind of drug or something in order to bridge the gap between the disconnection and the connection that they long for inside of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will say they because I've been extremely fortunate not to have this part of my life be what I would call overtly addictive. I mean, I might be addicted to other things like sugar or, you know, living on the edge or whatever. But I have had the great fortune to have been taking drugs in my early days, or, you know, being Japanese, I have an allergy to alcohol. So there were things that I could have gotten addicted to, but probably didn't. And I was really disconnected, you know, when I was in my 20s. And Reiki really, the gift that Reiki gave me personally was to connect back to myself on a spiritual level. And what I mean by that is not religious, but from my spirit self, to know that my physical self was not the only thing that was contained in Phyllis. And then to connect with this community that all had the same experience was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. There's just something about that heartfelt connection.
Uh-huh.
That I think that's been, you know, my main craving all my life.
Uh-huh.
Maybe why I did drugs. I don't know.
Well, that was just my idea, kind of on an esoteric level. And I don't know if anybody has come up with some kind of theory, but in your speaking about it from the very beginning, I just get that it's possibility. And what has been reported to me with people who have used Reiki consistently and often in drug and alcohol abuse centers is that the most important thing is for the people who are giving Reiki to the drug and alcohol clients that they be trained specifically for this work, because there's some really sensitive, the vulnerability of the person coming for the treatment is so high that quite often, without understanding it, I will say an innocent Reiki practitioner can really say exactly the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that that's not about that we've done Reiki wrong. Definitely not, because I don't think that's possible. But I do think it's possible that we recognize the energetic sensitivity to that addicts have, whatever you are addicted to, whether it's sugar, alcohol, or crystal meth, and be able to really be with those people in a way that allows them a possibility to find another avenue of connection.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's been a really amazing gift for these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited by your renewed sort of idea of incorporating this into your work.
Yeah, I just recently bought a new table. And,
great.
Yeah, I found some other Reiki folks from different lineages and everything. But we get together to share Reiki, which is really great. And, being able to share my story and them share their stories and stuff. So that's been real interesting.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's really great. Well, you know, I just have I don't know if you're interested in this, but I feel like there's this gap. You know, what's happening right now in the Reiki community is a lot of emphasis on public practice. This is, for me, stepping one step, giant step, to the side of folk art practice. And folk art practice is really about being connected and doing it with your family and friends and, you know, being able to just be connected naturally. And when we talk about public practice, I'm more talking about people who come for as kind of what we would call clients. And there have been some groups that have asked me to do a public practitioner training, and which I'm really interested in and have attempted to do over the years. And I feel like one of the great applications is in drug and alcohol abuse. Yeah. And I'm just thinking that, you know, as you go about doing this, that another eventual focus might be for you to write a kind of protocol for the training of Reiki students to work with drug and alcohol abuse people.
Interesting. I haven't thought about that. But yeah, that sounds very interesting, though.
Because it uses, you know, it uses your, is it your social work background?
Psychology.
Psychology background.
Yeah. Specialized training with substance abuse, though.
Yeah, and your substance abuse, you know, specialty and all of that just put together. I just think that would be so fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. God, that would be great.
So, anyway.
Just an idea.
Sorry, I'm just rambling on. But
no, that's fine. That's fine. It's been so long, Phyllis. I don't know if it's the last time I saw you was when you came to my house.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah, when you brought Mark Rouge to my house.
Right. I think that was after Nisui 2 up in the mountains somewhere.
Yeah,
in
yeah. Yeah, I remember that. That was when I had all the wolves.
Yeah. So do you still have your wolves?
No, they've gotten old and died, but...
Oh, that's too bad. You didn't replace them.
Yeah, I had 12 at one time, and...
What was that about for you?
Oh, wow. Right after Murphy and I got together in 1990, I met this guy that came from Alaska, and he had brought some wolf hybrid dogs down. They were wolf and husky mix. And so I fell in love with him and got two puppies from him, and that's how it started with us. But then during the Usui One, you know, that was the most amazing thing to organize that, because people were coming from all over the world, and I never imagined that I would be doing something like that. But Guy Breitman came in and fell in love with the parents, the male and female wolf that I had. And when she became pregnant, he wanted two of the puppies. So I have grand dogs now in Spain.
Wow.
You know, he loved those dogs. They were just amazing. But they're so very different. And I would like to get some more at some point. But I was happy to get fewer and fewer so that Murphy and I can maybe go on vacation together.
Right, because they're not very... Your ability to leave them to somebody else is not very high, I imagine.
Yeah, it's... A lot.
A lot of care.
Yeah. And they need a lot of attention too. So, But now we just have three rescues and they're wonderful and they're much easier to care for right now. So.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, let's see, how can we gather this back?
Which way you want to go?
Exactly. It's a good question. So you have alluded to sort of with, I would say, taking a break from being so involved with the Reiki community and the Alliance. And I'm just wondering, do you feel like that was a natural cycle? After just plunging in and, you know, just going full tilt boogie for a while, that it was time for you to step back and regroup? Or What was your feeling about all that?
There was, I don't know, during that time, it was right after I left the board, and there was a period of time where I felt very lost, like I didn't know what my role was anymore. And then, of course, the economic crash started shortly after that. So that was also a factor that was going into it. You know, just a lot of different things. I'm trying to think what else was going on in my life. That was a time when, you know, had a lot of deaths in my family. My father died, and, a lot of different things. So I just sort of retreated for a while and got out of touch with a lot of folks. But I think after, well, when the economy's like it's still starting, trying to recover, it's actually doing much better now. But that has helped in a lot of ways. One of the biggest things was Facebook. You know, I hate to say that, but
I mean, that's the whole purpose of Facebook.
It was, was very reluctant to join Facebook for a long time, but then, when I think back to when I was on the board and the computers we used to use were just those little green screens, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing the board meetings with fax machines and these reams of paper being printed out, you know, and now we can do Skype. You know, it's amazing. But with Facebook, I started reconnecting with people that I haven't seen and being able to catch up, and just even if I see one little thing a week, you know, to keep up with their lives and these people that I love so dearly. That's, you know, it really feeds me and nurtures me. And then to be able to take a trip like this, you know, is just incredible. You know, spending 10 days just visiting friends and reconnecting our hearts. Just amazing to me.
So for the listeners, I just want to explain that Chuck just returned from a trip to the Netherlands and Germany.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. To visit some of his old buddies in Reiki. And as you can hear, it was a very successful trip, reconnection. And I think that's wonderful. And a great report on Facebook because, you know, I too, being, I will say, almost 65, I feel like, you know, I'm of the generation where still computer communication seems like really a great advantage, but it's also not the same as a written letter, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm going to have to get off that. Because, you know, what my trip with Facebook has been, which has been really amazing, has been to see that my definition of being a friend is, you know, it's like I had one definition of being a friend, and that was to be loyal for the rest of your life and to know everything about that person and to be able to connect. But I just see now that that was on a really physical level way. And, you know, like to know their parents and their, you know, brothers and sisters and what they do for a living and so on and so on. And yet, you know, in my 30-some years of Reiki, I have all these people that have come through my first degree class. I don't know anything physical about them. Like, I don't know what they do for a living mostly. I don't know if they have a spouse, who their partners are. I don't know their sexual identity. I don't know if they have kids unless they happen to mention them or bring one to a class. You know, I don't know really anything about them on the normal level, so to speak, right? And yet I have this connection with them on an energetic level that is so strong that it lasts, as you can see, and you have experience for years. It'll last for a lifetime. I mean, We've shared an energetic experience through the initiation and through treating each other that will never go away in my life. So mm-hmm. whether I remember their names or not, it doesn't really matter. It's like we're connected. And then I think about this another level of Facebook. So that's the people that I've actually been in the same room with. But now in being on Facebook since the end of August or something, I just see that people have real connection with me, and we've not been in the same room. We've just been on the same Facebook page. And one of the things that happened when Facebook really became, you know, out there a few years ago, I think it was Time Magazine had Mark Zuckerman, I think that's his name, the guy who...
Zuckerberg or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, founded Facebook. Sorry for...
Sorry, Mark.
slaughtering your name. But, you know, I read this, and I read what his, you know, how it started, but also what his dream was. And I just got that this was something that I needed to experiment with, because it would maybe stretch my idea of what friend meant. And it has, totally. I mean, I've connected and people have connected with me from seeing me like 15 years ago in Germany or, you know, 30 years ago in British Columbia when I first started teaching Reiki. And, you know, it's like so amazing. And I don't have to spend much energy, you know, like the other thing about the old idea about friends is that, you know, they like took so much time and energy that you could only have one or two really good friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah, it's completely different now.
Now it's totally different. And, you know, this is going to save the world. You know, I really believe it. I believe that the more connection we have to each other as human beings, the less prone we will be to shoot each other.
Mm-hmm.
I look at
some of my friends, and we'll have like 92 people that are friends in common. That's unheard of. You know, it's incredible. And I was when I went over for this trip, you know, I had specific people that I knew face to face, and I couldn't wait to see them and everything. But then there were these other people that we had sort of communicated and felt a connection with. Like Yali Yekutili, you know, I met her once in Portland, but I don't really remember that.
Uh-huh.
But we started talking on Facebook, and I just felt this incredible connection. And so when I said that I was going to come to this this meeting that Yvonne was putting together, she said, "Well, if Chuck's going, I'm going." So she came from Israel, and you know, just all these different people were coming together, and I met some people that I had never met before and had incredible connections, you know, but we knew each other from Facebook. And it's not just Facebook, it's how we're meeting on Facebook, you know, through Reiki. And that's just incredible to me.
Uh-huh.
Just an amazing, amazing way to live.
Wow. Wonderful. Well, you know, I have to hand it to the new generation there. And I really have to just acknowledge that I'm a bit of an old fogey these days. But the old fogey is willing to be open. And I tell you, Facebook has really opened my eyes to the promise of the next generation. And thank God, because I can let go of feeling guilty
mm-hmm.
for screwing up the planet. I can let go of feeling hopeless and helpless that I've left a damaged planet to people who don't have any resource. And that's just absolutely not true.
Huh? Yeah, that's true.
It's absolutely not true.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I love it that this connection that I feel in Reiki is being overlaid by this connection on Facebook. And I'm really excited about this Facebook thing, and I am more and more excited by it every month, and find the level of communication, even though it's like just one line, it really is clean. Like there's no There's mostly no hidden agenda to it.
Yeah.
And I find that really remarkable.
Yeah, I do too.
Really remarkable. Well, who would have known that we were going to talk about Facebook?
I think the central theme is the connection and that heart connection.
Yes.
And that's the most important thing to me.
Yes.
I mean, it's what drove me when I was younger to do drugs, trying to get that heart connection. And I think it's what drives so many people to do so many things.
Right.
But, through Reiki and through the different meetings, that's what fills my heart, too.
Yeah, right. You got it there. So tell me, what's your plan for, we won't say the far future, but what's your next step in heart connection and Reiki and, your life?
Right now, my focus is getting, of course, establishing this new job in the new location. And as far as Reiki, I really want to make another trip next year. I would love for Murphy to be able to go. His mother lives with us now. She's very elderly and needs a lot of care. He's had to, stop working and care for her full time.
Wow, good for you guys.
Yeah, it's tough. But
rewarding. So, I mean, that's incredible connection.
Yeah. And we'd like to be able to take vacation together and things like that. So I'm hoping next year we can somehow arrange that, because he also knows a lot of these folks, and they all ask about him, all want to see him, and we don't know how much longer we're all going to be around, So just want to do that.
Uh-huh. And what about your own Reiki practice?
I treat myself mostly. Treat my dogs.
Uh-huh.
Treat family. My mom just had a hip replacement, so I'm sending Reiki to her. What I'd like to do is to work more with this this group of Reiki people and just begin to expand a little bit. It's interesting sharing with them. They learned a completely different lineage. And at the same time, they honor you as the lineage barrier. They want to hear more. They want to... it's just a real interesting sharing and connection with them. I would love to teach more. I'd love to start teaching again. It's been a long time since I've taught, but I would love to do that. And I think that somehow through work, it just feels like something's going to happen there as far as teaching. I don't know how that's going to work, but that's kind of the direction I feel like I'm going.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, I have a feeling that, I trust your feeling, number one. And it'll be good for you to, just get prepared for what's coming down the pike, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because, I just want you to know, Chuck, and I assume that you do know this, but for other people who are listening also, that, I think everybody goes through periods of time where in their life, Reiki seems to be in the background. It's not gone. It's just in the background. And, then it cycles around and it's in the foreground again.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's good to, I don't know, I think it's great to be able to find your own way through that and get reconnected in a way that really works for you, and
mm-hmm.
find your own place again in the community without needing to sort of invent the wheel. So I feel like, the things that you took away from the Alliance experience were the people, and, they remain, and obviously.
Yeah.
And that's really great. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, I will always, always be grateful for my time with the Alliance, whether I ever join again or not.
Right.
There's just so much that I have gained from them.
Right.
And the friendships and the connections and just experiences. I mean, if you take a look through my my Facebook pictures, I've got albums of all the different conferences that I've been to.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just a neat trip down memory lane.
Great.
Back when I was thinner and slimmer and
yeah, more svelte. Okay. So we all. So I'm just wondering. Oh gosh, did I lose the question? Did you maintain contact with your students that you had around where you live?
Some I do. Some of them I've lost contact with.
Uh huh.
I've looked and looked and looked. Like online through Facebook, wherever, to regain contact with some of them. And, I've gotten contact with some, but some of them I can't find anywhere.
Right.
Don't know what's going on.
Right. It's so interesting. You know, I've tried to do that too. And what my last, decision has been is just to let them find me. But in doing stuff like Facebook, it really puts you out into available land. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean? You really
yeah.
get available. And if people want to find you, they can. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a girl from high school that contacted me, and I didn't even remember who she was. You know, but she said that she was thinking about me. She was telling somebody about me and how I had influenced her life. And she decided to look me up on Facebook and found me. And so, wow. You know.
Wow, that's great.
So we never know, you know, the least little things that we might be saying is having an impact on someone's life.
Right, exactly. I know what the question was. Mm-hmm. So you keep talking about going back to Europe, and I'm just wondering why Europe for me and also for the listeners. Like, didn't you ever meet any Americans or?
Oh yeah.
Or other people, I'm just wondering.
My other favorite place is Seattle in Northern California.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And got a lot of Reiki connections there. I love it. I think probably because that was my first Reiki Alliance conference.
Oh, was it another one?
Yeah, in Vleland. And I just have it's got a special place in my heart.
Uh-huh,
and,
great.
For whatever reason, a lot of the Dutch masters and German masters I really feel connected with. Even when we're meeting in different countries, whether it's the States or Curacao or wherever, we always seem to team up for some reason.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah. Don't know what that's about, but I love it, though.
Great. Well, good. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for all your reminiscing and also for your really beautiful vulnerability on the show. I just listened to a TED Talk by this woman by the name of Brené Brown, B-R-E-N-E, Brown, on vulnerability and
wow.
then on shame.
Mm-hmm.
It was really great to listen to her because it confirmed some of my own beliefs about our vulnerability. And that is that our vulnerability is also the source of our strength and the source of our gift as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel that Reiki just allows us to be vulnerable and to be out there and to be authentic as possible. And, you know, you're a great example today of being authentic. And I just really appreciate it because I feel like it will inspire many, many people who listen to the show to be authentic and to be vulnerable. Thank you.
Thank you. Fantastic.
Yes, it is. Would you like to, do you have anything that, I feel like there's something left, but I don't know what it is and I don't have a question. So if there's something that you would like to say to the listeners, I would just love it if you would do that.
If people will listen with their hearts and follow their hearts, you can't go wrong. Especially, you know, with Reiki, I find myself treating my heart all the time. I don't know. That's where authenticity comes in, is feeling your heart and being able to share that with other people.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.